hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads. Where bandits are catacombs and giant doors. Protect the chest and store some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's horse. A grand theft of Elder Scrolls. Simon's quest with Toe and Earl. Rocket shoes to Everclue. Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash your crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. Head on over to Spotify and spin it up for your boys.
Yes.
Or maybe I should like stir it up or something like that. Like maybe make it mildly sexual. So yeah. I don't know. No, I'm trying to be a sex symbol one day. Twitch.tv/Control Issues Pod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. Blue Sky. Control Issues Pod is the handle, as it is for the worldwide AM. Hit us on the Gmail, controlissuespod@gmail.com. AMC, how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. Doing all right. Doing well enough to get these back-to-back weeks in. Actually, news has been coming, trickling steadily with a lot of heavy things worth discussing, which is nice. It's sometimes gaming, you're just like, all right, we got to talk about layoffs again. Fuck. like right now, we get to kind of just focus on gaming and the passion of it as opposed to the industry of it. So It's been kind of nice. And so getting these back-to-back weeks in has been good. But as far as my personal life, not much. I mean, not much has changed from week to week. Work is back to being demanding again. I have noticed that I do need to – I gave myself a couple days to kind of be like in a dickish mood. Just because it's like we're down a person, so we're understaffed and just very, very demanding. And like as a manager, a lot of it's getting put on you. So it's been busy. And so over the past week, like definitely towards the end of the week when things really started to pick up, I was just not in the mood. Like if it wasn't important, you didn't need to talk to me. I was concerned. I know we're heading towards being back in the office more, but I definitely see like the benefits of like if I wasn't here, I could just be working and not having to to deal with your bullshit right now. But yeah, I gave myself a week of that, and so next week I got to come back with a new man, a changed man. So I gave myself the weekend to rejuvenate a little bit, watch some AEW wrestling. They had Blood and Guts this week. It's the every year they have this event called Blood and Guts where they take two wrestling rings, put them together, and then they take a cage that's big enough to go over those two wrestling rings. And then everything that happens inside it is what makes up Blood and Guts. Like you can bring in whatever weapons you want. It just gets like out of control. And this year they added in the women as well on their own, in their own thing, obviously not like mixed wrestling. AEW has been building up their women's division, and they felt like this was the first year that justified having a women's Blood and Guts alongside the men's Blood and Guts. And I will say that it definitely was warranted. The women were holding it down. I would say even better. WWE's had this. They have their own version, which is called War Games, and they introduced the women to it like a couple years ago, and they started excelling in ways that like the men can't just because of the size and what they're able to do. And same thing happened with Blood and Guts, like a women's match. They have the cage down, and everybody's supposed to be locked in the cage once every entrant has entered the ring. It's a 5v5. What the women were able to do is, because of the smaller frames, they were able to find these little openings in the cage. So the heel women, they had two smaller wrestlers. They were both small enough to squeeze through those cracks in the cage. They went out of the ring, out of the cage, took out the refs, got the keys to the cage, unlocked the cage. Then they took out a couple of the faces, the good guys, the baby faces, threw
Yes.
them out of the cage, locked them out of the cage, and then proceeded to beat the shit out of the remaining good guys that were left in the ring until the point where they quit. And then that's how they won the blood and guts match. But there were just, yeah, so many moments. Like one of the women that came in, her name is Timeless Toni Storm. She plays like this, like old school, like old timey, like Marilyn Monroe style, old Hollywood type character,
That sounds
socialite.
dope.
Yeah, and but she's like tough as shit, and she comes into the ring. She has like these hand wraps, and she's not done wrapping up her hands. So she comes in, beats up the first couple of people, goes back to wrapping her hands in the corner, and then she proceeds to go get a bucket. And inside the bucket is just a broken champagne bottle, like so just glass. And then she applies whatever to her hand to get the stickum going, and it starts putting the glass on her wrapped up hands, and it proceeds to start punching all the other wrestlers in the ring. And then obviously it leads to them like off screen them blading themselves, and then all the women are just bleeding profusely. Like it was absolutely
They still
insane.
blame. That's
Oh yeah, the
hilarious.
blading is definitely not, as far as AEW is concerned, blading is definitely a current thing. A WWE, they will use blood every now and then, but for the most part they use fake blood, and it's very apparent when somebody has a capsule of blood just explode in their mouth and all of a sudden they're just kind of vomiting up blood. Yeah.
Drooling.
But I mean that's it's more humane than blading, I would say. But yeah, but it was it's still gnarly to see when a woman blades because it gets all up in the hair and shit. And so yeah, it's it was great. Like one of the women, Sky Blue, she just looked like she was straight out of that movie Carrie from back in the day, with just blood just drenched all over her face. But it was awesome.
Jesus.
The ending was great. The men's had their blood and guts match. That was just as good. A guy got slammed through a table that was on fire, and like the oil, I guess, was still a little bit on him. So he was rolling out the fire. He was fine, but he was rolling out the fire like immediately. And yeah, there is so many moments. I can't even think of them all, but they were all great. And yeah, easily one of the better AEW events of the year. I watched that over the weekend, put me in a good mood, and I was like, all right, I got my aggression out of myself, so now I can show up to work now as a new person after watching Blood and Guts. But that's all I got for me. Watch basketball, same old, watch a little bit of, what's that show? Demon Slayer, but not enough to be notable. But yeah, how about A-Dub? How you been? How's your life been?
Got a couple boxing days in last week. Feeling good, seeing little changes in my body, getting my rhythm and stuff tight. All right, so on Wednesday, I wasn't thinking, and I had a couple edibles before I went
Yes.
boxing. So I
Oh.
get there, yeah. So I get, edibles. It's like a body high. So I get there, and I'm hitting the bags, and I'm like moving, but like my feet keep catching the ground, like my legs feel real heavy, and I was like, oh shit, I ate the edible, so it's like my whole body is sluggish. So I'm fighting through it, I'll keep it going, I get my rounds in. I come back yesterday and no edibles this time. So I get in there, and like when I'm walking, I'm like, oh, my legs feel different. They feel like dense and strong. And then I get to the gym, and I'm like moving, but I'm like moving like sharp with intent. And I'm just like, oh, I worked harder when I was on the edibles, and now I'm benefiting from all that gain now that I'm not sluggish anymore. It was awesome. Like I'm just moving precise, moving around the bag, zoop, zoop, pop, pop, step, step, pop, 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 step, step, pop, pop, pop. Just going nuts. I was having a good time. Did that. I started a show called Last Samurai Standing, and the best way I can describe it is imagine Squid Game in feudal Japan, where the entire goal is to get the last remaining samurai to kill themselves off.
Like commit
So
seppuku,
no, like
like
basic so basically
okay.
there are these flyers that are going around town. And they're like, oh, 100,000 yen to the samurai who survives this battle royale. So everybody goes and shows up. Everybody is given a number, so Squid Game automatically. Everybody's given a number, and basically what the rules are is that you have to go from wherever they are along this route through multiple stations until you arrive in Tokyo. And the first person to get there with 30 points gets the money. Now, you get points by taking other people's tags, and you can already see where this is going. So basically, a bunch of samurai, everybody's like down and out. There's cholera moving through the region. You know, it's bad. It's just a bad time for everybody. And this money is everybody's opportunity to live a good life, to help people get better, you know, save their families and stuff like that. You know, got war veterans, you got a sword saint in there, you got so many anime archetypes. And that's the thing that's really helping me follow along with the show, is that I'm looking at it like a live action anime rather than, you know, just a serialized drama or something. It's kind of helping me get into it. But yeah, so they've got hundreds of samurai and swordsmen, everybody with some kind of martial arts acumen. And yeah, you get the points by killing each other, taking each other's necklaces. And if someone takes your necklace and you go 10 seconds without it, then you get eliminated. Like somebody comes up with a musket and just puts you down. So there's been situations where like people don't have a necklace and the countdown starts, the guys take a name and they're like fighting somebody, or they'll pull a necklace and put it back on. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll shoot you now. Yeah, so I'm watching that. It's pretty good. It's very interesting. It's like as they go through the various stations, they need more points in order to go through. So in order to just leave the initial area where they received the rules, were given their necklaces, and basically the game began, they needed to get another necklace. So you could only leave if you have 2 points. So everybody is slicing and dicing each other, trying to get these necklaces. People are trying to form alliances and, you know, sharing information, trying to figure out what's the nefarious purpose of the game and all this stuff. So it's interesting. It's got a lot of circumstances. I'm gonna try to see it through, and I'm very excited about that. I also watched Fantastic Four First Steps, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. You know, I'm a Vanessa Kirby guy. I'm a what is his name?
Adrian Pascal.
I'm an Eddie from Stranger Things guy. It's all that. And yeah, it was awesome. I liked their retro futuristic portrayal of the Fantastic Four they went with. I felt that was way more accurate than trying to like modernize them and make them fit into the overall MCU aesthetic. I think them having their own flavor and being from a different dimension as well is a very cool thing. I also watched Thunderbolts, which was kind of cool. It was nice seeing like a bunch of anti-heroes just kind of worn out and trying to figure their lives out, like questioning their decisions and having everything catch up to them. So it was nice to have like two solid Marvel movies to just watch back to back over the weekend. And that was pretty awesome. And you know, I had a lot of time to watch stuff because I had a bit of a scare over the weekend AMC. You know, I've been just deep in ARC Raiders. Like I'm talking 6 to 10 hour sessions multiple times a week. You know, I'm playing with my brother, I'm playing with my friend, and just I was doing some solo stuff. I'm playing, it's been about maybe 4 or 6 hours. PS5 shuts off. I was like, oh, okay, that shut off, but you know, my computer monitor's still on, my TV's still on, you know, all the little lights and indicators of things that are plugged in are still on. So I'm like, okay, so it's not just a straight up outage. Let me turn it back on. Maybe there was an issue, you know, did all the repairing and everything. Played for a few minutes, out again. So I'm like, okay, something is wrong here. Unplug it, like sit it to the side, didn't mess with it at all. Yesterday, and then you know, looked online, saw some remedies. It seems like the PS5 Pro seems to have issues with the power saving settings, and yeah, so you know, had to turn off the automatic rest mode, had to turn off the automatic controller shutdown. had to turn off the, what is it, like that HDCP, the stuff that links it to the TV, where if you turn on the TV, then it turns on the console or vice versa and whatnot. So turned all that stuff off, plugged it back in this morning, played almost 3 hours of Arc Raiders and, didn't see any signs of trouble. Nothing dropped out. So I'm hoping that whatever happened, to make it shut off is either remedied or perhaps it was just a fluke. I got coincidentally, I got a text like around 4 a.m. from the power company saying that they had restored power in the area. So I'm thinking, it was, they estimated the outage that they repaired at about 2 a.m. I think my PS5 shut down around 10:30 or something, but maybe the power was a little squirrely and my surge protector just kicked and tried to save the console or something. I don't know, but hoping it was just a one-off thing and I don't have to deal with it anymore. I'd really like to continue enjoying hundreds, maybe thousands of more hours with my PS5 Pro. I'd like to be ready when GTA 6 comes along so I can just get right into that, keep on rolling. But it's not a major setback. I'd either take it in and get repaired or I'd get a new one and use whatever time I could to try to do a data transfer or something. But it was frightening. I was going to be very upset if I couldn't get into any Arc Raiders this weekend, but I was able to and I was very satisfied. But
Well,
that's it
so
from me.
we are already there, Adub. So tell us what you've been gaming on.
I mean, just Arc Raiders, man. It's
Yeah.
awesome. And it's like the first title update or the first update on the roadmap came along. So we have the new map, Stella Montis, which is, I believe the entire map is indoors, and it's a smaller map than even the smallest maps that were already in the game, like the Damned Battlegrounds or the Buried City. So Stella Montis seems to be the new PvP spot because you can't help but run into people, you can't run from anybody, you can't hide anywhere. So I'm hoping that'll take a bunch of the rats and the extract campers and just get out of all the other maps. Go to Stella Montis. You want your PvP, you want to ambush people and lie to people about being friendly and then shoot them in the back. Go to Stella Montis with the rest of your kind. Leave the rest of Arc Raiders to those of us who are trying to get things done, trying to finish these missions, trying to enjoy and explore. Nah, I'm trolling. But yeah, man, Arc Raiders, it just continues to give. We got through the first phase where we had to donate resources. In fact, we were doing so well as a community donating resources and advancing the first phase of the Stella Montis live event that they're using to introduce the map and everything, that they reset the counter. I think it within about the first hour of the event going live, we got the counter to 11%, and then we came back like after a match, and it had been reset to 1%. And the developer was like, "Yeah, we didn't expect you guys to be doing so well so fast." So we reset the counter and increased the maximum. It was like, okay, that's fine, that's fine. But we got through that in like a day as a community. So that was awesome. My brother and my friend, when we squad up, we've dubbed ourselves the Righteous Raiders. We're going out there, we're trying to help other raiders, we're trying to put the kibosh on the spawn campers. We're trying to get these missions done, we're trying to help people, reviving, giving resources, exchanging. Just trying to make it a real community out there. So, if you see somebody coming by, eliminating an arc that's giving you trouble, taking down somebody before they can knock you out and take your stuff, and they say Righteous Raiders, you pay it forward. But yeah, man, my what you've been playing is very short. Arc Raiders is going to continue to be the main topic of my discussion, at least for the coming weeks, until another major title comes along or I have my fill and I start to go back to the stuff that I need to finish before we have another deluge of just major releases. So, AMC, what have you been playing?
Yeah, I'll keep it short too. I only played Zelda this week, just enjoying pushing forward in that one, exploring more of the map, uncovering more, did a raid, a monster raid, which is fun. You'll just see like around the world because of the upheaval, there's all these monsters. There's a higher frequency of just monsters just around the world. Upheaval was when all the sky islands formed, and so when all that land flew into the air, it created all these caves, and within the caves are a ton of monsters. And so every now and then, as you're walking along the map, you'll see a raiding party, and they'll have like the mission objective above their head, where you can go and talk to them, and they're like, "Yeah, like, oh, it's Link. We know you're good with the sword. If you want to join us, we're about to go raid this cave of monsters." And it's always fun because it reminds me of what is it, the Warriors video game back in the day, Rockstar. They made it based off of the movie The Warriors, where it was just a movie where it's just a game where you're just constantly in gang battles. So it's like you're rolling with the homies, you see a group of people, you go and you fuck them up, and it's like kind of a free for all, but like you're on a team, but it's like free for all in the way where you could be fighting a dude and another dude would just launch himself across the screen to like take out that dude as you're fighting him, or to take you out. I mean, that's how it is. It's like you'll go into a monster raid and there's a bunch of monsters in a cave, and you'll see that raiding party just go in, and then you'll get your fights going, but then you can go help out other people. Dudes will come and help you out every now and then. Two monsters may come and try to gang up on you, and it's just a full-out brawl, but it's great. They're always fun. They're not long, and you get a little bit of cash, but it's rupees in this game, so you get some rupees by the end of it. So it's always like a fun little like side mission. And we'll see what happens. Zelda, what I do like is a lot of things tend to build towards something. I believe there's a certain amount of monster raids, so hopefully by the time I finish them all, there'll be some type of reward through it. I came across a couple of other caves, got some more clothing options that became available. I even got the mission where it's like, I guess some bandit who was a almost a fashionista in some form, but he had all these special outfits, and he basically let me know that they're hidden around the world, so I can go and find them. But then he also gave me some other objectives where it's like, go and find these three keys, and if you bring them back here, then you'll get access to like this ultimate like weapon. It's called like the God Deity weapon. It's like God weapon. I'm working on getting that. So it's taking a little bit of time, but I'm doing it as I go and complete other missions. Like as I get to those areas where the keys may be, I search for them as I'm doing my other main objectives. And so, yeah, not much more to say there. Just really pushing the story forward and enjoying my interactions with Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. But Adele, let's take a break and we will come back with our first topic of the week.
Topic of the week.
Week. We are back, A-Dub. You want to
Yes,
break us off with
yes.
that first topic of the week?
Topic of the week. Yes, y'all.
No.
Let me pull up my trusty internet browser and let me go straight to it. I'm gonna hit you off with the good stuff because people were doubting, people were hating me. See, they were saying Sony. It's thrown in the towel on Japan. It's pulled out of the region. It's all Western. It's all woke.
It's all peach fuzz and fat faces.
Yeah, but Sony is back to remind you that not only have they not given up on Japan, they're doubling down on it because they come in with the state of play Japan, pan, pan, pan. Yes, Sony had a Japanese-oriented state of play all the way down to Japanese-speaking hosts and subtitles. In this state of play, they showed off a bunch of games from the region, and we're just gonna let you guys know what's up with the ones that caught our eyes. So I'm going to lead off. One second. I mean, because I don't want to talk about stuff that we already know about, although the one thing I'm about to bring up is something that we know about.
There's an update or something. You could hit that.
Yeah, I could talk about the update to something, you know, Gran Turismo 7, Spec 3, and Power Pack. We're getting the trailer ahead of the launch later this year. Your man Kazunori Yamauchi took the stage. He was breaking it down, telling us even more details about the upcoming Spec 3 update and the reveal of the Gran Turismo 7 Power Pack. Quoting the man himself, "We wanted to bring this realistic and hardcore racing to Gran Turismo at least once. So we created this Power Pack, which will be released for sale along with Spec 3 at the end of the year." And what is in it? since the power pack brings real racing to the series, including races such as a 24-hour race. Sorry, I had to sneeze. But yeah, 24-hour race. But they have the tracks and they have endurance races in Gran Turismo 7. However, I haven't seen anything over like an hour. So to have a straight up 24-hour race, I don't even know how that's gonna work. Like, are you gonna pause it? Like, are you gonna have your boys help you and you do it in shifts? Like, I don't know what's going on. But there are racing enthusiasts out there who are all about that kind of stuff. So it's going to be very interesting to see how people react to the addition of these kinds of hardcore, just long running endurance races. AMC, is this what you've been waiting for to finally pull the trigger on Gran Turismo 7?
No, definitely not. It's kind of cool to see this addition in there. Like, everybody likes the idea of what an endurance race. Kind of the idea of bringing it to Gran Turismo. I think people enjoy that. I like that one movie. This one had like supercars and shit, like in the PlayStation Gran Turismo version. But that movie with what is it, the Ford versus Ferrari?
Yes.
and that like that long ass race. But I always like that. After seeing that movie, I like the idea of it. And we've seen games come out with their versions of like race across whatever extended race. So that was always fun. I remember, like, man, I'm really like tangenting, but like, I think it was Jackass. They had an episode around, I think it was like the Gumball Rally or something.
Yes,
like that.
Gumball 3000.
Yeah. It's like they didn't sleep. They're just all like, just the idea of all these motorists on the road just driving like through the hours of the night on this long extended journey. It was fun to see that journey, but also to think about just how dangerous that could get if like people weren't like doing all the proper things to like keep themselves like aware and coherent while on the roads through those hours of driving. But,
and it's not like a totally professional thing. Like, these are just straight up maniacs partying along the entire route.
Exactly. So yeah, but after seeing all those things, that always interested me. So I think that's cool. I'm glad also to see that Gran Turismo still getting like meaningful updates. How about yourself, A-Dub? I know, like, we talked about, you've been into Arc Raiders, but you hop in Gran Turismo every now and then. Is this something that could entice you to get back in eventually, or is that something you're looking forward to playing down the line? Where are you at with these updates?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the one way to bring me back to any game is to release new content. So with a major title update in Spec 3, in addition to this power pack, you know, albeit an additional charge, but, you know, Gran Turismo has given me so much. The least I can do is give back, since I haven't never purchased a credit, never used a microtransaction, just racing for the love of the game. So yeah, man, I'm very much looking forward to Spec 3. The power pack sounds interesting. I saw when we were watching the trailers, you know, there was some interesting UI stuff. There were some interesting like menus that I don't recall seeing within the GT7 experience. So I'm looking forward to seeing everything that the additional content is going to be adding. AMC, what caught your eye?
See, man, I'm like trying to find that one game, but like it doesn't seem like anybody cared enough to like bring it up.
I'm guessing Entropy Effect.
I thought it was like Woo.
Oh, the Wuxia RPG, the Wandering Sword, I'm gonna say.
Yeah, Wandering Sword. Yeah, like, hold on, I'm trying to find it. I'm gonna just pause this real quick. Sorry, folks. All right, I found it. I went directly to the PlayStation blog. IGN, you let me down. I guess they only wanted to hit what they felt was meaningful, and that ended up being all the stuff that I cared about got left off of the menu on IGN. But that's why we go right to the source of PlayStation. The game I was talking about was Wandering Sword. So here's their write-up. The RPG Wandering Sword will launch on May 28th, 2026, and pre-orders start today. Set in ancient China and brought to life with stunning pixel art, it features dual battle modes, 20 endings shaped by your choices. Oh, hell yeah, we got choices, A-Dub.
Yes.
And a full Japanese voiceover by an all-Japanese cast. Yes, that representation. Mm. Japanese cast for a story about China, yes.
Yes. the way it's supposed to
Yeah,
be.
but no, yeah, it's it looks dope. Like, I've never been into the Dynasty Warrior style of games, but I've always been into the stories that those characters are drawing from. And so getting a version of that in a tactical turn-based RPG is something that's always interested me. And so I seeing that that's coming next year to PlayStation, hopefully Switch, because it would be dope to have this shit like on the go. Is definitely something that I will be interested in playing. I liked it. Like, we're just in that 2D HD revolution right
That
now, where it's just
renaissance.
that renaissance and everything is just amazing that comes out with it. Just they understand what people love about the nostalgia of old school RPGs, but then getting that voice acting that everybody wants, getting that that the systems that everybody wants, that look, the character development, everything that we loved in the old Final Fantasies that we played, but then modernized with all the quality of life things that, that held those games, that made those games feel, I guess, dated for back then for what they were. And so now to have a modern perspective, also a story that's focused on warriors of ancient China, I think is gonna be really dope. So I'm super excited about this game. Just I saw the aesthetic, I saw the gameplay. It took me right back to Live Alive, a game that I believe didn't come out in the US and then got ported over in the modern generation. They gave it all the good quality of life, voiceover acting and dubbing that we love. And it was one of my favorite games to play. And I played it over like a period of time, but every time I came back to it, it was dope. And this one immediately I saw as being like the next Live Alive experience that I would want to that I want. And so I'm super excited about this game. Hey, Doug, what'd you think when you saw Wandering Sword?
For some reason, as someone who never played it himself, but have seen, screenshots, have heard you just, wax poetic about it, I immediately got the impression of Live Alive from it. I was like, oh, AMC will love this. But yeah, just saw it. It looked cool. Once the grid popped out and it started going
Yes.
into that tactical, I was like, oh, we got a little something more in here than just a standard JRPG. So, and it's also doing the whole Wuxia story. So that's going to be interesting subject matter. You think it's going to have your boy Lubu
I hope so.
in there?
What is the next season of what's it called coming back? Fucking Record of Ragnarok.
Oh, right. I don't know.
Bring it back.
It's like it's always when you start wondering when it's gonna come back that it comes back like the next week.
Yeah,
So
love
hopefully that next season is coming because I need it. But
Oh,
yeah,
man.
it's awesome. Like it looks cool. It's decidedly old school, but it's got flavor. It's got charm. I was totally entertained by some of the sprite work in the animations, like when the character was riding the horse, like when they're riding the horse forward, the horse is like very narrow and head on, but then as soon as you start going left and right, the horse gets like three times
Yeah,
wider.
that sideways profile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's just a whole horse left and right, but then head on, it's just like a horse face. And it's a sprite that's like the size of the regular characters in all directions with it. Oh, I thought that was so. It's cool, not particularly a game for me. It looks a little too old school for where I am right now, what I'm looking for. However, it did look cool. It has that charm. That tactical turn base looked awesome. I like the effects during combat for the various attacks that they have. I got a real good impression of what that would look and feel like to control. Ultimately, not for me though.
Well, what was for you, Ado, that you want to talk about next?
Well, I'm going to tell you what was for me because I found it somewhere else within the website instead of on the list that we were working from because it wasn't there either. But Blast Blue Entropy Effect X. Yes.
Damn,
This
damn.
is a roguelike action game based on the hit Blast Blue franchise developed by 91 Act in collaboration with Arc System Works. Players will fight through an original story with beloved characters from the game, fast-paced and precise combat, and vibrant 2D visuals. Blast Blue Entropy Effect X is launching on February 12, 2026 for PS5, Xbox Series, and Nintendo Switch, Switch. But yeah, like this caught my eye because, 2D side scrolling immediately, I get Metroidvania type feels, but I don't see anything that lends to that. It's just where my mind goes first. But the more I watched it, the more I saw just over the top anime style action, very well animated, very well articulated, I would say, where it's not just a bunch of crazy effects happening on screen. They seem to have direction. They seem to have like balance, and they take up like deliberate amounts of space and things like that. Like, it looks very flashy, but it looks well thought out and very tight and precise. So, I'm willing to give it a chance. It looks awesome. I love games that look awesome. I need me some of that 2D side scrolling action, man. And I'm totally ready for what this is offering. Discovering that it's a roguelike is definitely knocked it up a couple points on my interestometer, AMC. How do you feel about Entropy Effect XXX?
X. Yeah, it looked dope. It was one of those ones I had to like do a double take, watch it again after watching, like, hey, hold on, I am not giving this game the proper appreciation that it deserves when I was just seeing the action. Like it looked wild, but it also looked effective because it's like they would do a big attack and there would be all these just effects going on, but it would clear out the entire screen. So it wasn't like it was like there it seemed somewhat like if you're gonna do that big attack, you're gonna do that big attack. Like it's there's a control to the action, but while also feeling very like powered up. And so like seeing the pace of the action, the side scrolling nature of the combat, like there's something there. And we've been getting like a couple of these style of games, and this one immediately just looked like it's like right in that vein of like just a good time, a good gaming experience from a 2D action, I guess platforming. I don't know how you would qualify these games, but we've been getting a lot of these and they've been dope. And this one, knowing that it's part of that BlazBlue, so you know that they have source material to draw upon, and then seeing the action, it just has a lot going for it. And so I want to see as the game gets more and more more marketing and we hear more about it, like how people react once they get the hands on, because it looks like a dope ass game, and we've been getting the just a couple of these. And I mean, people just absolutely loved what's it called recently? The Hollow Knight, like part two,
Silk Song.
Silk Song, yeah. And as you said, this is a roguelite, so I'll be interested to see how it works that into this style of game. But yeah, I loved what I saw here.
Yeah, it's probably leaning more Dead Cells than anything else. So it's going to be interesting to see what the level design is like, to see how the challenges escalate, if you're going to be indeed getting like randomized benefits, or are there going to be any drawbacks, or risk reward type systems. That's the stuff I live for. But AMC, did you see anything else you would live for in this state of play, Japan?
Yes, the game that I saw. So as I said, we're in the 2D HD Renaissance. We're also in the little homie Renaissance, because we got what there's very like we go back far enough. We got the Big Daddies, and
Yes.
we got the Big Daddies. We had Ellie. Then we have jump ahead. Now we got Pragmata, which a little robot
Yes, my girl
homie.
Diane.
Yeah, and then now we got Dame, I would say Damon. I guess it is Damon and Baby. I want to say Demon, but Damon and Baby. Through the write-up on PlayStation Blog, coming to play PS5 and PS4. Oh, question. In early 2026, Damon and Baby follows a cursed demon, demon lord, and a human child on a heartfelt journey. Yes, it's always heartfelt. Also, I left out Atreus too. This action adventure combines exploration with twin stick shooter combat. Collect loot, level up, and strengthen their bond through every battle. So yeah, once I saw that this was twin stick, I was me like, oh, hold up a second. And then they had perspective changes, because it seems like at some points it's like top down, maybe isometric. Then you got more of a sideways, like platforming thing going on, like 2D sideways platforming thing going on, like at least in a boss battle. And it looked like there's even like puzzles to the platform, like on one boss battle. there are these platforms kind of moving. You have to shoot the platform, it freezes it, then you jump onto the platform, shoot the other one, and you're making your way up to the boss's head, I'm assuming, to get off the big attack. It's like it's working in the twin stick, but also having this platforming aspect to it, at least at certain parts of the game that give it a different feel than what you would think of most twin stick shooters, which are usually top down and you're just bullet helling your way through the game. So I'm excited to see what this game has to offer. It has, as mentioned, it's got the baby, you're Damon and the baby. And so that automatically makes me feel like there's going to be a little bit more story, even if it's a subtle story. There'll be story to this game as to why you're a demon that's helping out a human. But clearly there's some heart there, and I think that'll just make the characters a little more relatable in a way that will draw me in more. And so just seeing the gameplay and the aesthetic and everything that it has to offer, this looked like a game that would be fun to play down the line. How about yourself, Ada? What did you think when you saw Damon and Baby?
It's cool, man. There was only one thing about it that annoyed me. It's a very minor annoyance. It's just a detail thing. But when you get to the twin stick shooting element, when he's shooting his weapon, his feet don't move. He's just sliding and turning on a dime. But it's okay because I could see the amount of charm, the amount of passion in the project. I can also see that there's a lot of other elements to focus on rather than, one little hang up. It's got platforming, it has those camera shifts where it might give you the scrolling upward kind of look, or a side scrolling kind of look, or to give you the top down. So, you get different looks, different perspective changes. That's gonna give you different kinds of levels and encounters that you can design for. Like, for instance, there was toward the end of the trailer, there was a boss encounter where there were these other, like, kind of enemies flying around left to right on the screen. The boss's weak point is its head, and it's pretty high up. And as he's shooting those enemies going left to right, they open up into temporary platforms. So, shoot them, jump up, shoot another one, jump up, and making his way up to the boss to then be able to dish the damage on the weak point. So, it's got some interesting ideas, some very readable type things. So I don't imagine it being an overly difficult game. However, it's got charm, and I'm sure it's got some other tricks up its sleeve that make it more unique. So I'm gonna keep an eye on it. It's not something that's immediately on my list. However, it's something that I believe is worth being aware of. So I will continue to be.
All right, what else you got, Ada?
This is one of my favorites, AFC. Because it's uniquely Japanese while also falling into kind of the life slash job simulator kind of category. And this one is Inkonbini One Store. So in Inkonbini, you are the owner and operator of a small convenience store, and your day-to-day tasks include, stocking the shelves, setting the prices, going around, checking your inventory, looking around the property, looking for stuff that's going on, having conversations, talking with people, getting to know what they're about, getting to know what maybe you would want to have on your shelves to make their time in your convenience store that much more enjoyable and rewarding. And it's just this falls into the same kind of vein that I'm looking for with perhaps Gas Station Simulator or other games like that, where you're tasked with being that person that sits in that one place as the world comes to you for their needs. So it's a very interesting game. Gives me like faint memories of Papers, Please, where, again, it's a job where you're just sitting in that one spot. People come to you and you got to determine, like, oh, okay, look, this can happen, this can't happen, you need to get out of here, you can stay, give me that. And I gotta stop. So Inkonbini, it's definitely a cozy game. It doesn't look like it has any, high stakes kind of conflict or decision making. But if you just want to chill out, run a convenience store and hear the stories of the locals who bring you their business, then I think this might be the game for you. AMC, how did you feel about Inkonbini?
Yeah, it looked interesting. Definitely not a game for that I would get, but I liked what it had going for it. Like running the mart, you like I liked how you would leave and go to like say like a vending machine, get like something from there, use that stuff to then decorate or to spruce it up, to
Oh,
give it a little character. In other games, that would normally be like your room. You would find some stuff and you put it around your room, but it's you're putting it out, you're giving your mart personality, and so you're putting stuff up around there while also like like working on like shelving and all that shit. So like I'm sure it's interesting, some of the people you come across, the situations you deal with. Yeah, as I said, not necessarily a game that I would be interested in, but I liked I like the process, because I'm all about those Sims, right? For me, Stardew Valley was the farm sim that I always wanted. And like the other week, maybe it was the Xbox event, there was like there's some game and it was like your I think it was like you run one of those like hobby shops. It was kind of similar, like one of those ones like where it has like where they have like the trading cards, like Pokemon cards and stuff like that. And I even think they had their own like knockoff Pokemon thing, and you would put those up like around the store. And so it was like similar idea, except instead of a convenience store, you're working a hobby shop for like collectors. And so I do like that, like more of these like work sim style of games are coming out, because people frequent like these places and kind of like telling a story about their lives. Like it's almost like what was that movie? It was not Jay and Silent Bob, but Clerks,
Clerks,
the ones that like they spun off from Clerks, and like just a movie about the daily life of a clerk at like a convenience store. But this one, it's very signature to Japan. And when I went to Japan, I did go to Marissa and I went to a couple of those, just like grab like a bite. And so we get like those, like what's it, like the rice ball with like some like tuna inside. And yeah, so we like
onigiri.
yeah so like I'll always forget those, because it was just when I think about like our 7-Elevens, you just think about like some crusty ass hot dog sitting
Ugh.
inside like a thing.
Just rolling.
like some shit like that. But then like going to Japan, and it's like it was quality food in a convenience store for easy pickup and affordable. And so yeah, I was like, I always, that was one of those things that like stuck with me. And so like a show that's kind of centered, or a game that's kind of centered around that life, I think would be kind of fun, especially because it's in Japan. So yeah, not a game that I would necessarily get unless like suddenly I hear like there's just a lot more to this game. But I liked what it had going for it, and I am interested to hear what people think about it when it comes out.
Just a side note, I kind of want an odometer on those hot dogs because I want to know what kind of mileage they've been putting on them hot dogs just rolling
Oh,
all
I know,
day.
right? Like,
Like,
what's
are
like the
those fresh and you got like 12 miles on it?
yeah, it's like when the health inspector comes in, like what's the number where they're like, all right, you now get a C. Like how long is that thing got to be in there?
You let these hot dogs
Like,
roll for how many miles? You're still selling them to people? Like, what is this?
how's it just not overcooked? Like so maybe it's just like that's it just builds up that casing at some point, and then like it just never gets overcooked at some maybe they I don't know.
And what's the end of the line for that? Like, so it cooks all day, just rolling miles on it. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, nobody bought it. In the trash. Just cooked a hot dog all day.
Like
It's
you think like
awesome.
it'd make more sense to have like a shawarma or something, where it's just like just constantly like just like slow roasting. So then like yeah, so then like by the time you get it, it's like nice and like tender. Like that'd be a little different than like just a hot dog sitting on like a roller. Like we had like a nice quality piece of like what is it, like pastor like
Oh.
meat, just like
Oh,
in the just a dude, but
just
just shaving it.
shaving.
Like that would be dumb. That
Oh, shit.
be
But
dumb.
AMC, what else caught your eye?
Let's see. I'm in territory where I'm just gonna now just list things I found interesting. So, Elden Ring Nightreign, we found out it's getting DLC. This is called the Forsaken Hollows.
Oh,
Hollows.
oh.
The first DLC for Elden Ring Nightreign, The Forsaken Hollows, has been announced for a release in December on December 4th,
All right.
accompanied by a brand new trailer. This update adds two new playable Nightfarers, the Scholar, hell yeah, and the
Nope.
Undertaker, double hell
Nope.
yeah, along with two formidable new bosses to put your skills to the test. So you got the Undertaker coming out here, tombstoning people. You got the
Yep.
Scholar,
Hired
philosophizing.
educating.
Yeah, educating. Shit, mate. Yeah, coming to Elden Ring. So that's interesting. I'm interested to see what the move sets of these characters are. Not move sets, but I guess like the builds of these characters are. Especially the Undertaker. Like, what's his deal? And it's an update to Nightreign. It was one of those games that when it came out, there were the single player dudes who were like, "Who is this for?" But or like, how many people are gonna actually want to play a game that I guess a From Software game, but Elden Ring universe style of game that's centered around multiplayer. But yet it came out and it was successful. It sold at the time. A lot of people were talking about it. It was one of those things that I found interesting because I felt like a lot of influencers, typically people who are like poo-poo like live service anything, they weren't really talking about the game, but then they had to acknowledge that like people were playing the game. So it was like one of those things that it found its audience, and so now it's getting DLC. So I'll be interested to see how that audience takes to it. Hey Dub, what do you think about the continued support of Elden Ring Nightreign with this new DLC update?
I think it's awesome. I mean, this is typical FromSoft. They put out something, they put out even more to supplement it, add to it, expand it, except Armored Core 6 so far, which is a little peculiar. I'm not going to hold it against them. It took a long time to get a new Armored Core, so it's probably going to take a long time to get new Armored Core DLC. However, in respect to Elden Ring, Nightreign, Forsaken Hollows, Hollows, Hollows. I'm noticing, I don't know if it's a Nightreign thing or maybe it's something that's coming with this new DLC, but did you notice that the animations and like the visual polish of it are just a little punchier and a little sharper? Like people, like when the scholar had the book and the pages are moving and he's moving his hand and stuff, is I'm not used to seeing that kind of like just high quality presentation in a FromSoft kind of game like that. So that took me a little bit by surprise. And at some point, it made me think like there was like an engine upgrade or something. It's not enough for me to get into Nightreign. It's still not my kind of Souls experience, at least in my head. Who knows what'll happen if I actually get my hands on it? But just, on paper, it's not doing it for me. It seems pretty cool, playing a lot of Arc Raiders, so I'm starting to give a little more ground to those like, well, we're in the squad and we're fucking shit up. Like that's I guess like multiplayer roguelike, I guess, would be what's going on. I don't know. But it's cool. And it's cool for the several million people who have jumped into Nightreign already and many more who probably will jump in once the DLC comes out. So, the people who are enjoying the product get to get more content. That's always awesome. And yeah, man. So, not for me, but a good thing for those that it is for.
Yeah, let's take a breaky dub. We continue with Sony State of Play Japan. Pan, pan.
Bam.
And we are back with our State of Play reaction. A dub. Any? Is it on me now, or is it on you? As far as the next game,
What did we just talk about?
we kind of discussed a lot of the games for the most part. I guess I'll jump
Oh,
in
we were
real
talking
quick.
about Nightreign, weren't we?
Okay. Yeah. So I threw a night rain out. So do you have
Yeah.
anything else?
Yeah, I got one.
Yes.
It's interesting because clearly a lot of time and effort went into it. I can't help but laugh. But it's a pretty big one. So this is Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. We got ourselves a gameplay trailer for this. Let me see if it got a little write-up. The State of Play Japan kicked off with a fresh look at Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. It comes with another new look at its diorama visuals as it heads toward its February 5, 2026 release date. So I did a little more digging because I just had to have a better idea of what it is I'm talking about here. The Dragon Quest VII, it looks like it was originally a PlayStation title. And it was pixelated, it was 2D, sprite based, all that, like what you would expect from an original PlayStation JRPG. I didn't start playing the Dragon Quest series until the follow-up, Dragon Quest 8. And that one, it was cel shaded, but it was also 3D. So it's, a bit of a surprise to me to see that Dragon Quest 7 was completely pixelated. But Dragon Quest 7 Reimagined is not pixelated at all. It is full 3D, which is awesome. However, with the way that they reimagine the characters, especially this one character by the name of Kiefer, who looks to be a knight. He has this flowing blonde mane, blue eyes. He's very regal and strong. However, he has a very tiny body and a very large, realistic head, which is the most jarring thing I've ever seen in a JRPG in my life. Like it's very similar to the proportions and somewhat the appearance of the characters in Final Fantasy IX, just to give you a kind of a reference point with how it looks like a living doll. It's just so eerie. But other than that, the game looks fantastic. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, the visuals, the lighting, it all goes a long way. The navigating through the open world, that is also in full 3D. You can see the monsters on the world map. Everything is beautifully rendered. The colors are just rich and vivid. It looks awesome. If you can get over the absolute horror show that is Kiefer's head. AMC, how did you feel about this gameplay trailer of Dragon Quest VII Reimagined?
Yeah, gameplay wise looked great. Art style looked interesting. I'm sure I could get used to it. There's something I don't know, there's something to it that like that has some charisma. I don't know what it is about it. But yeah, like it cuz it almost because of the nature of how they look, the open world and all that stuff, like it still very much feels retro in the funky proportions of the characters. And so it's like a it's an updated, realistic looking retro game in a way. But I will say about what I will say about this is that Dragon Quest games have just been hitting over the past couple years. So there's a part of me that's like you can get a little funky with it because we know the pedigree up to this point. And so I imagine this game will still be great, even if it does look even if it does take a second to get used to the look of it. The one that if they're gonna reimagine one, it's gonna be Final Fantasy VIII, or not Final Fantasy VIII, Dragon Quest VIII for me, because that was the one that I feel like it's the only one that I played of the. I'm not even gonna say modern. I think I played that on like a PS2 or something, but yeah, we're at 11, so it feels like more recent when you go by numbers. But yeah, eight was the one that the only one that I've really played, and I absolutely loved eight. It was a long ass fucking game, and that's probably why I haven't gone back to the franchise. But everything I hear about it, the especially like the art style that really drew upon was it Akira Toriyama, and so like that was always something that appealed to me when it came to the franchise, and
I
so
mean,
yeah,
the
if they
titular main character of Dragon Quest VIII was basically
fucking
Goku,
Goku, it's fucking
especially
Goku,
when he went Super Saiyan.
yeah, it's
Later in the game, you straight up have a Super Saiyan
yeah.
transformation.
He's
It's
got the
great.
hair, it's everything, the eyes, yeah. So it's I always appreciated that as I played those games, and they were just great, true to form, traditional RPG, turn-based RPGs, and I always appreciated that. And I always hear great things about the newer ones, and I've always been interested in playing, but I know that they are just games that when you dive in, you got to really dive into it. It's like very much like the Tales games. I've always wanted to play those, but once again, big JRPGs that you really have to get into, and so that's the only barrier that's kept me from jumping into them. But they always score well, so I always have my eye on them. And this one looks like it looks good. It'll be interesting to see if I get into it. But I liked what I saw here from a gameplay perspective.
I like Dragon Quest because it's a nice, solid, traditional JRPG that you can always depend on to just always be in that nice, tight pocket of what a JRPG is. There's always an excellent like jumping in point is Dragon Quest. I didn't see you said you were out of stuff. However, we got some folks that are just getting started. We
Not
got some
much to
folks.
discuss.
Not much to discuss, not much of interest. Troll of the week, troll of the
Troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week.
troll of the week, 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 week. Troll of the week coming sideways at State of Play Japan. And this is after everybody threw a hissy fit at Sony for shutting down Japan Studio. This is after everyone cast aspersions saying that Sony has given up on Japan and pulled out of the region. Let's hear what these trolls have to say about State of Play Japan. Second letdown in a row. Come on, Sony. I'm guessing the first one was the State of Play where they showed Seros and Wolverine. I question your values. Next troll says, another meh event. Next show says Elden Ring Night Rain, The Forsaken Hollows. DLC is getting DLC now. Implying that Night Rain itself is a DLC. I see what you did there. Next show says these breadcrumbs warranted a state of play. Breadcrumbs. Next show says state of meh. Next troll says, state of this could have been an email. Next troll says, another pathetic showcase. For fuck's sake, I hate that I can't get decent games to play on my PS5 years later. Now, yeah, see, I don't know if we had this discussion already on the show, but in the pre-show, we made a pretty astute observation that despite the lack of like a Sony first party presence in the way that it has been in generations past, this generation has still been overwhelmingly packed with high quality games and experiences that it's to the degree that like the lack of first party support or the lack of just the first parties really carrying a this given generation hasn't been felt at all, in my personal opinion. Like, the third parties have been doing such a good job, especially with so many up and coming studios, a lot of studios just making their mark out of nowhere, studios that have been bubbling for years, that have come into prominence, studios that just emerged and shattered the earth with their debut titles. Like, we've had so many great games from so many unexpected sources. And it's like, you're looking for games to play? How is that even possible? Like, Jesus, I bought more games since, I mean, between now and April than I probably bought in any given generation of gaming. Like, it's ridiculous. And all of them are bangers. Any month of releases this year alone would have been a great year of releases. What the fuck are you looking for, man? Last troll. All those fanboys wanting Xbox to fail. This one you can expect going forward. Oh, man. I mean, this may be what you can expect from a small cross-section of developers in a single region, that being Japan. But I mean, even if you took all of Japan into consideration, it would be far greater than what you think you could expect based on this state of play. But we got a whole world of development talent, various regions, various mythologies, beliefs, horror stories, action heroes and icons, values and morals and ethics, all different things and factors and elements that can come together to make original, unique, creative experiences for us to enjoy. I don't know, man. If you didn't find anything you like, if you're sitting around with these almost $1,000 boxes in your living rooms, gathering dust, not being played until they fall to pieces like my PS5 Pro may be doing, you're in the wrong hobby. AMC, you got anything for these trolls?
Nah, man. I mean, if you looked at that state of play and you saw nothing of worth of value. I mean, it had a little bit of everything. Like we saw RPGs, we saw a ton of horror games, we saw a twin stick shooter, we saw Elden Ring's update to Nightreign, if you're interested there. So you got a little bit of multiplayer action there. Like there's a little bit of everything, and it was all from one region. And that's kind of the key, because we were just talking about how Europe has been stepping its game up. We also have China getting into the fray. We saw a game announced for Singapore on one of these events, like not too long ago. US is still holding it down. So there's it's
Korea's in the mix.
yeah, Korea's in the mix. So it's like it's literally just one facet of all the areas that come with game development, and they're bringing heat as we saw there. And so that's how you got to view it as it's I know people go to these things and are like, what does Sony have to offer? But as I've been saying to you, it's like from my perspective, like I absolutely love my PlayStation 5, and it has nothing to do with Sony from a standpoint of first party offering, because I can't even remember the last first party game that I bought from Sony, but yet the third party offering is so good that it doesn't matter because I'm just enjoying playing video games. And so yeah, like that the idea that, well, if Sony didn't bring in a first party game, thus this is a failure of an event. It's no, it's showing their ecosystem off, showing you what other games you could possibly buy on top of the games that you already are pre-ordering or wish listing and looking forward to. And that's all that you can really ask for. Like I know there's a lot of cachet in first party because that's how you decide what console you're going to buy, at least for some people. But really all you care about is what games they have to offer. And if it's well supported by third party, then that's kind of all that matters, because at least for somebody like me, I know there's a different range of gamers. Like there are gamers who can just blow through games in a weekend. And so yeah, they're looking for as many games as possible. But for somebody like me who can only play so many games at once and it's going to be for an extended period of time, I have to be more selective. And so just getting a ton of great games announced and knowing that I get to pick one of them and that game is going to keep me fed for a while, that's all I can ask for. And so that's one of those things that from a gaming perspective, people are always just looking for just a shit ton of content. I just want quality. And if I can see at least one or two games from one of these events that I can walk away with wanting to buy, then I know that I'm set. And so if people are looking at this, they didn't see anything that they liked. People who are complaining about the way that people look, well, we saw a bunch of jiggle physics going on in this thing.
Unnecessary.
Unnecessary. So if you wanted that, you got that here. There's a little bit of everything, and so I can't help you if like you're just on you have a one track mind, and that one track is just never satisfied. That's on you. That's on your personal life. You need to go seek therapy, because we are here just enjoying video games, a dub. That's all I got for these trolls.
We ain't got time for that belly bitching. Troll of the
Belly
week.
weak,
Troll of the
troll of the
week.
weak.
Troll of the week. Troll of the week.
Weak, weak,
Troll of the
weak,
week.
weak.
Week, week, week,
Well,
week,
that
week,
was not the only big announcement of the week, Ada. We
week.
got something by the way of, or coming by the way of Valve, but we're pulling this from IGN Wesleyan Poole, because I'm reading directly from the article, so I know who wrote it.
Yes.
Article is titled "Valve Announces Next Gen Steam Machine." I'm gonna leave out the rest of it, but let's see. Valve has announced a return to its Steam Machine PC console hybrid hardware alongside a new version of the Steam controller. Roller. As part of
Roller.
a big day for Valve hardware announcements, Valve confirmed the next gen Steam Machine and Steam controller features and specs, but failed to announce one key piece of information: the price. Ada, why'd they give us everything all in one announcement? Like all the games are going to be available, the price. We want to see demos of all the games. We want to see developers talking. But no, all they did was announce the hardware. Ada. Let's see. Why? We do know, however, that the Steam Machine comes as a 512 gigabyte model, at two and 2 terabyte model. Okay, so you got your options for memory. And we'll ship in a bundle with the Steam controller as well as standalone at some point in 2026. I'm going to read these specs, but they mean nothing to me. Spec-wise, it has a semi-custom AMD Zen 4 SC12T CPU, if you know about that, A-Dub. A semi-custom AMD RDNA 3 GPU, which you know about that.
Nothing.
Supports 4K gaming and 60 frames per second. Oh, and FSR, we do
I
know
don't know about that.
that. Valve described the new Steam Machine as six times, oh, so many times more powerful than the Steam Deck, with 16 gigabytes DDR5 and 8 gigabyte GDDR6 VR RAM, which you know about that, A-Dub.
A little bit. The PS5, I believe, has 16 gigs of DDR6. So they're combining DDR5, which I believe the PS4 had, with a small amount of DDR6.
So is this less powerful than the PS5, Ada?
Let's get through.
Let's see. Yeah, well, it's six times more powerful than the Steam Deck. People are playing
Exactly.
PS5 games on a Steam
On the
Deck,
Steam
so
Deck. So
yeah,
now
that's
you're
all that really
playing
matters.
better.
Yeah, so that's all that really matters. And with all this upscaling and shit, you don't really like. It's hard to tell what these numbers. It's really like it comes down to the development and what's put into it. Is there anything else interesting here? I guess we'll get a little backstory. It's an interesting move from Valve considering the original Steam Machine range released 10 years ago in November 2015 was considered a failure. The initial idea was to release a small form factor gaming computer that operated SteamOS and offered a home game console-like experience. Valve also released a Steam controller to support the release of the original Steam Machine, so it makes sense that it would release a next-gen Steam controller to go alongside with this new Steam Machine. But the Steam Machine didn't last long. All right, they're just like rehashing bullshit. Let's see. So this article fails to get into the other piece of hardware, but there was also a VR headset that was announced along with it,
The Steam Frame.
the Steam Frame. Look like it had some dope shit going on, but I don't have an ar a separate article pulled up for that. But A Dub, so A Dub, you just get into it. What do you think about Steam bringing back the Steam or Steam Valve bringing back the Steam Machine?
It's definitely a timely reintroduction to the console gaming space with everything that's been going on with Microsoft recently. It's also very timely because of the reason I think the original Steam machines didn't really land as much as they wanted it to, which is because I believe that the price for the kind of hardware you can get was still a bit disproportionate. I think nowadays you can get the kind of hardware resources you need for this kind of device at the kind of price that makes sense. This goes double when we're in the economy now, where console prices are going up instead of down, and console prices are approaching $1,000 each. So it's like, hey, if you're gonna start paying a G, you might as well pay that for, a little small form factor PC instead of a game console. But who knows? Let's see what happens and where we go from here. As for the tech specs themselves, I don't know much of what to make of those. I'm not in the PC space quite yet, despite really wanting to. So if anybody's got a hookup on a 5090 graphics card, let me know because I'm trying to find one. And but a Steam machine, like, I don't know, man. The Steam Deck is already doing well for itself. And if you're gonna give me something that's more powerful that gives me access to the PC gaming ecosystem while giving it to me in the form factor and the overall environment style of a console, then that could be the way to go, especially with what they're doing. As it seems, it's like every major note about the Steam machine, the controller, the Steam Frame, every major note about that seems to address some major gripe that, has been rippling through the console community for years and years. Like, one of the more notable items that people have been upset about for years now, even a couple console generations, has been stick drift. Like, and it's not as if it's a problem without a solution. It's a problem with people in control that had no real desire or drive to solve that problem. It's like, why make it so people can keep their controllers longer, and we can just sell them more controllers? But with Valve and their controller, as well as their VR hookup with its controllers, you got Hall Effect sticks, just standard. And it's like, if there was going to be that kind of solution in the console space, they'd probably try to give you that in their premium controller, but Valve's giving you that with the boxed-in controller. I think that's a huge pro-consumer move, because I guarantee you, there will be a reasonable amount of people, like a very healthy number, that'll get a Steam machine just because of the Hall Effect sticks. And on top of that, like, it's got the back buttons, it's got the touch pads. It's got the Steam machine itself has the customizable plate. It has LEDs and things that can relay information to you from the system. You can also use it like a PC. You could run whatever programs you want. And I don't know. I think it's the right product for the console market at the right time. I think you'll be able to target people who are on the fence, or like, PC gaming curious. And this could be that gateway into that entire ecosystem. I mean, even for someone who, like myself, like the desired path would be to just go all out, spend the money, monster rig. But until the hardware becomes available at a reasonable price, it's like, this could be that middle ground where at least I'll be able to begin amassing my Steam library. At least I'll be in that Steam ecosystem. And, depending on what the price is, it might just be something I can add to my setup rather than something I have to like orient my setup around, if that makes sense. Like, if something is really expensive, then it's like, okay, well, my setup is going to be geared toward this, and everything else is just going to be like basically a peripheral. But if you have a peripheral that is itself a console ecosystem, I think that can go a very long way. So, I'm very anxious to see how much this costs and to get a better idea of what kind of like visual and technical performance that it can yield across the board. We're getting pretty close to the next generation of consoles. And while I'm sure the Steam machine is like top of the line for where we are now, I'm curious to see how it'll age, or like, where is gaming gonna be, and where is this machine gonna fall into that? Like, is it gonna be able to keep pace with the new consoles that are coming, or is it like already dated just by, the nature of being out now rather than later? How do you feel, AMC?
So a couple things. One, I love the form factor. It like takes me back to the GameCube, just something that's
Yes.
super portable. You could move from room to room. Like, I look at that PS5 and that thing ain't moving from that fucking spot until I'm done
This
with it.
Steam machine looked like a man cube.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, like the way that the consoles have gone, like they're just so big now that like you just leave them where they are, and if you got to move them, it's like it's not an easy task. And so now, like seeing that Steam machine, this is even like what I love about like the nature of like my Switch 2. It's the portability. Like I can just grab that thing, and even like if I need to bring the dock, it's a little ass dock, and I can just move that to another room if I want to play on a different TV in a different room. But the nature of just being able to just easily pick up something and take it somewhere, that's what you love about it. There's so much talk about like especially people who own like Steam Decks and whatnot, there's so much talk about the wanting to have not I guess not cross play, but like like where
Cross
your
progression.
cross progression. And so being able to like you have your Steam Deck, you could play something and then you get home and then you go right to the hardware, which is going to be stronger than your Steam Deck, and you could go right to that. Like I could see that being a thing. But what I would say is like very different now is just the landscape has changed so much from when that initial Steam machine launched. Like when that first Steam machine dropped, it was kind of a thing where So the PC and console space, I felt like, was still very fractured. Like, PC gamers were still very much PC gamers, and console gamers were still very much console gamers. So they put out this machine that was in between the two spaces, and PC gamers were like, well, why would I get off my PC to play that? And then console gamers are like, I have my PlayStation, so why the hell would I want that? But then Sony and Microsoft, but yeah, switched up their policies over the years. Microsoft straight up just started putting everything that they put day one on PC. And Sony over time has put all of their games pretty much on PC. Like I would be curious to go through and see what of their first party games aren't on PC at this point. And so now you put out a Steam machine, you can play Xbox games, you can play PlayStation games on there. So now from a console standpoint, it's like, hey, I can have access to everything, even if it's at a delay. People own multiple consoles, so they might view it as like, well, I could own, say, this console and then have a Steam machine as my backup. Or like you just use that as your in between, where it's like, all right, I'm gonna get a Steam machine now, but maybe one day I'm gonna get a PC and then I'll just have all these Steam games ready to go. So I just think that the gap has just bridged so much once PlayStation most notably started putting their games on PC, because then I just started to see a lot more, at least a lot more people that I listen to podcast wise, start talking about like playing PlayStation games on PC. And if they were to start just putting them there, they would start just playing all their games there day one on PC. And so it's just the transition has already started. We've seen so much talk about, just from an industry's perspective, the growth of PC, and that's why Microsoft has put a lot of focus there, and PlayStation. They notice that we're basically leaving this entire audience that could be generating more revenue for us. We're just completely overlooking them out of the nature of trying to hold on to exclusivity and appease our console base. But over a while, they were just like, if we do timed, like if we release these on PC at a delay and don't put them on Xbox, these games, then people don't care. So, and then just they started doing that. And then we saw Microsoft start to shift. And now Valve is in play now. And it's funny, like we live in a world where, like a month ago, we were seeing Shuhei Yoshida with an Xbox ROG Ally playing on it, and like, and he could be playing Ghost of Tsushima on it if he wanted to. So it's just like, it's all there, like it's all heading that way. As much as people want to make fun of Microsoft, it's funny. It's like Microsoft announced, like, hey, we're gonna do this thing where you can play Xbox games and Steam games on a console, and people are like, they're out of the hardware business. Next day, like a month later, Valve is like, we're putting out a console, and like Valve is now in the hardware business. So, like, but no, it's the transition, at least of these companies. And we'll see what PlayStation does, because it's going to be interesting to see if PlayStation still releases games at, I guess, at the cadence that they have planned when it comes to putting games on PC, like giving it about like 6 months, maybe. I'm not sure if they do like over a year for games. It'll be interesting to see if maybe they hold off more now on bigger titles once like people are on an Xbox and on a Steam machine playing PlayStation games, that they might want to hold off on that. But I think ultimately, we're at a point now where these companies are just they're trying to make as much money possible. So I don't see them undoing the moves that they have already in place, them being Sony. And so I think this is just going to be the future now, where you're going to have options. And I guess the difference is you're going to be paying a premium, because that would be the next thing
It's
we
the
talk
only
about. Yeah,
difference.
the Xbox is definitely not going to be cheap, and we know the Steam machine is going to be comparable to a PC, like I guess a affordable PC. So we're guessing it'll be like,
Affordable
yeah, well, we are, well, knowing the specs, you can kind of then start doing the math of like where it's going to fall price wise, since it's not blowing us out of the water from a technical standpoint. So you can kind of imagine it'll be like where it's going to be around. And so I think, yeah, you're going to be paying in the upper, almost like a grand, if not a grand, for these consoles, but then you're going to have access to all these different other platforms. On top of that, they said it's like a PC, so I imagine there's all types of like options for mods that you can get that you wouldn't be able to get in a closed platform system like PlayStation. So that's like, there's just a lot of there's going to be a lot of benefits to going this route if you're more of a technical person. Like, I still don't think this is going to be, and this is like the other side of it when people criticize Microsoft, because this is definitely, this route isn't going to be, at least from my perspective at this point, the, and this is a loose term, the mainstream consumer. And so I'm thinking about like dudes who would like get like a Nintendo. They might not be interested in this, but I think the tech heads, and so we'll see how many of them are out there. It's like anything, like the PS Pro, like people are like, how many people are going to buy this? But Sony knows that enough people will buy this. They don't expect a full 100% adoption rate from the PS5 base to jump over to the Pro, but they know enough people will jump over to this. And so it'll be interesting to see how many people who are interested in Steam and in Steam games, but from a hardware standpoint, we'll jump into this now that the whole quality of life and I guess quality assurance system is set up where you know that certain games will be Steam machine verified. So there's a lot less confusion surrounding the device. So there's just a lot more that's set up for a modern console base. Any, do you have anything else here, Adub?
I do think it's interesting how this ended up being the perfect time to introduce a Steam machine because, like you were saying, like when the originals came out, it was a major question at the time was like, why am I going to leave behind the exclusives over here or over here to get into this Steam machine just playing PC games? And like, this is back before the PC ecosystem was really just killing it the way it is. Like now, like we addressed earlier in the show, there's a much healthier third party scene that itself can carry generations of gaming without, Microsoft or Sony having as emphasized of a presence. And now Microsoft and Sony are a bit more loose with their morals about first party exclusives. So now a Steam machine comes along. It has the best of all the third parties and more, the best of all the indies and more. It's got PlayStation exclusives. It's got every Microsoft game. Like, what else could you possibly want at that point? And if they price it right, it's got a VR headset already that has a much smaller form factor and a more stealthy kind of mature look to it than any of the other VR offerings like the PSVR 2 or the Oculus Quest and all that, or the Meta Quest and the Oculus or whatever is floating around these days. So, I mean, they came with a strong lineup of hardware. They're saying all the right things. They're appealing to all the right people. Like, if they just nail it on price, this is something that can be in a lot of people's setups just for the sake of being there. Not even like this is my main thing. It could easily, like, it could be the companion piece to the Nintendo Switch. Easy. Like, oh, I got my Steam machine, got my Switch too. I'm
Also,
good. All good. Man. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. I want to see what Gabe and crew are ready to put down. It looks great. The games are totally there, so there's no worry about that. Them Hall Effect sticks, man. The 30 hours of battery life. This PS3 talk. It's the good old days coming back where you can charge your controller once and not worry about it for a couple days. So I don't know. I'm pumped, man. It's nice. And like just it look like you were saying a month ago, we got people talking about, oh, this might be the last console generation. And oh, what are we gonna do in a world where Sony has no competition? And now Valve's in the mix. So you think consoles are just going to disappear after Valve just reintroduced itself into the space? I don't think so. So we got a bright future of console gaming awaiting us, especially with Valve continuing to, redouble their efforts and come back. Like, clearly they have an intent to get in this space, and they're going to try to do it by winning the hearts and minds of the consumers with the same kind of goodwill and the same, good consumer practices that got Steam where it is today, being one of the only natural monopolies that's fine. Like, I think developers, either like developers or publishers, something, there was a lawsuit that's being waged against Valve saying that they're a monopoly and like you have to be on there. And it's like, well, it's not as if there's not competition, and it's not as if they use any kind of nefarious tactics to strong arm people out of the space. Like, they got that majority stake in the market by running a great business and people just swear by it. People are in it, they're entrenched. So, you know, if anybody's going to be in this space, I think Valve is the one that's going to help bring a little bit of sanity back to things, given, you know, how off the rails everything got this generation, between Sony's live service push, between Microsoft just having plates bigger than its eyes, or what, eyes bigger than its plates, all this
Well,
stuff.
you think about it, which is hilarious. It's a console maker who people aren't going to really be looking forward to for exclusives, from first party exclusives, which flies
Yeah,
in the face of
that's
what people
interesting.
say what sells consoles is console exclusives. It's like, and that will be their strong point, is you can't hate their gaming choices because they don't make games other than wanting Half-Life 3. That's about it. So yeah,
Oh, dude, if they announce
it's
Half-Life
funny.
3, like, Steam Machine might be the best-selling console of all time.
Yeah. And then like the only other thing I would say is that, and now this is what I was saying with Xbox, with the PlayStation, I was like, you should let Xbox go first, and then we should let PlayStation go first and then release your Xbox after that's whatever more powerful, or you just take notes and then do all the things that people are complaining about with the next PlayStation. But now, since they're going up directly against Steam, what's beautiful is Steam's coming out next year. The rumored Xbox isn't until at least 2027. And so now they now get at least a year to make whatever adjustments that they want to make, to even, if not make adjustments, put out a more powerful console that's basically playing the Steam games at a more powerful rate. And so that's just something that they can iterate on if they want to eventually counterpunch what Steam is doing with this. So it kind of works out in Microsoft's favor that this announcement, one, came, and two, is the hardware is going to be here sooner than later. So this is I think it's great. It's like definitely the canary in the coal mine when we will see how people take to a PC hardware. Because as you said, Steam couldn't be in a better place in the hearts and minds of gamers. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Well, not in the best place possible, because there was that whole thing with the censoring, but we won't get into that right now. We got to take a break.
Yes.
We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our last topic of the week.
Topic of
Topic of
the
the
week.
week. All right, A-Dub, you got our quick hit to take us out for the week.
Yeah, I got a quick hit. It's one that's like, it's a near miss. It's like a foul tip of a story, because when I initially saw it, I thought the unspeakable had occurred. And then I looked at it again and realized something that really didn't do anything for me had occurred. So, Todd Phillips over at IGN reports, Red Dead Redemption coming to Nintendo Switch 2, PS5, Xbox Series S and X. Let me see. Rockstar tweeted, Red Dead Redemption and Undead Nightmare are coming to Netflix, iOS, Android, PS5, Xbox Series, and Nintendo Switch 2 on December 2nd. Experience these epic Western adventures with free upgrades, the ability to carry over game progress, and more, including DLSS, HDR, 4K resolution, 60 frames per second. I'm seeing this, I'm going nuts. I'm texting everybody. I texted the AMC, and then I read it again, and I was like, oh, this is the original Red Dead Redemption. It's not Red Dead Redemption 2. I thought that just mountains had moved, stars had aligned, and we finally got the Red Dead Redemption 2 update. I'm looking at it like, why is nobody like really talking about this? AFC, how did you feel when I sent you this news?
Well, the thing is, I thought they had already brought it back. Like,
That's what I thought too.
it's amusing.
But it
But
was saying,
whatever.
like, I mean, I guess they brought it to like last gen consoles.
Oh, so that's like a current gen version.
Yeah, it's a native version for current gen. And in addition to that coming, they also said that people who had the previous version can pay the $10 for the upgrade. Oh, no,
Okay.
wait, no. People who have the original version, they get the upgrade for free, but there is an upgrade.
Okay, so yeah, so
Sorry,
the
sorry about that. I made fake news. I'm sorry.
okay. Well, at least it's an upgrade. 'Cause I remember with the last one, when they announced and they brought it back, it like I think there wasn't really much of an upgrade to it. And so there was this thing where people were like, well, if you own an Xbox, you can just be playing the Red Dead Redemption on your Xbox because of backwards compatibility. But because I guess PlayStation didn't have it, Nintendo obviously didn't have it, you're paying a higher price to basically play the same game. But at least now you're getting I guess a next gen upgrade. So like it now for all those people, it at least makes that purchase a little more worth it. They can go back and revisit it with whatever updates it may bring that the previous version didn't have. But that's I mean, that's all I got here. Not really big news to me, as you said, once the word came out.
So they have released their come December 2nd, they would have released Red Dead Redemption 3 times and Red Dead Redemption 2 only once. Dude, just give me 60 frames per second. Like, give me
How hard is
something
it?
for Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's 30's annoying. I can see it's like mildly choppy, but it's serviceable. Like, I could play it, I could enjoy it. Give me that 60. Come on, give me the HDR. Let me like really, really see this game the way that it is meant to be played. But you know, hey, for people who enjoy Red Dead Redemption more than Red Dead Redemption 2, this is another way for you to enjoy a classic, just influential, genre-defining experience. Yet again, in better quality. AMC, will you be perhaps dipping, double dipping, triple dipping?
No, not right now. It is interesting on the Switch, maybe they do have my interest there, just because
HDR 4K,
yeah,
60.
just like have that, like any of those games like that where I could just have the convenience of the handheld and play it whenever I want. That's where the convenience would be. Like I wouldn't get it on a PlayStation, but yeah, there's too much out right now for me to dive into that nostalgia, but I do like that it will be an option at least. If anything, I haven't played Red Dead 2, so I want to play Red Dead 2 if I'm doing anything as of right now.
I always think about getting back into that game. It would be a much easier decision if it has 60 frames per second.
Yeah. Well, do you have anything else, Adub, before we get out of here?
No, that's about it.
All right. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is a bear. You are Control Issues. Thanks for playing.
Sucker. Sucker.